kudos to all of you for the last day coming at 8:30 for a 90-minute symposium. We're really happy for both of the sections, as David mentioned, that have sponsored and helped support this symposium. My role today is to really give a bit of history around fitness testing, specifically in schools, kind of function and utility of fitness testing that started back in the 50s, and give you a look and a glimpse toward the future, some of the things that are happening right now at the national level, and hopefully set the stage for the other two presenters. So I'm going to give a very, very brief history, literally fast forward through many decades, but I think it's important to, before I even talk about time period, talk about what we mean when we say fitness. And so we have two different types of fitness, and as I talk about the history, you'll see how those two types of fitness emerged and were defined and more rigorously measured over time. Historically, the item on the bottom, skill-related fitness, is probably, as I'm looking around, not making assumptions about anyone's age, but what probably we all experienced a lot of when we had to go through fitness testing in schools was skill-related fitness. Skill-related fitness consists of agility, balance, speed, power, coordination, reaction time. So typically when you see a definition for skill-related fitness, these are the components that you see. What does that remind everyone of? What? Basic training. I haven't heard that one yet when I asked the question. I'm going to use it. That's good. What else?
Screen testing.
President's Council tests, screening in schools, athletics, right? So a little more performance related, and I'll get into that. And then health-related fitness, again, still using and defining fitness, but in a different capacity, focuses on the following: cardiorespiratory endurance, or you'll often see that called aerobic capacity, muscular endurance, muscular strength, flexibility, and body composition. So as I move forward, giving you a glimpse back in time and then talking about our future, just keep those two terms in mind. As I said, I'm going to go quickly decade by decade. A lot of fitness and the concept and the importance of fitness came into the spotlight in 1954. I'm sure many of you have heard about this report that shocked the president. Studies came out looking at the differences between fitness levels of U.S. children and their European counterparts. And anyone wants to take a guess at what the studies showed? If it shocked our president, what did it show?
Very good.
Our U.S. children's fitness levels were very poor compared to European counterparts. Why would that be of concern around this time? The war, right? Post-war era. So that is where so much of that concern about fitness really emerged in terms of a national shocking the president level. So in 1956, President Eisenhower established the President's Council on Youth Fitness, which eventually evolved into different names, and we still had an evolution of that name recently. Today we know it as the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition. But it really was established in large part because of the report that shocked the president that youth fitness levels were so low. So fast forward only a couple years after that initial report, and what came on the scene? Obviously then there was a desire to develop tests that could be widely used, widely disseminated, allow for tracking of fitness in different capacities. In 1958, what is now the present-day AFERD, back then was the American Association for Health, Physical Education, and Recreation, the D for dance was added later, had this youth fitness test. And you can see a variety of tests on the whole battery, everything from sit-ups to a shuttle run, a 600-yard run walk, softball throw, and an aquatic portion that was later eliminated. And then the difference for gender, pull-ups for boys and modified pull-ups for girls. There's a lot of, let's say, discussion, debate, intellectual stimulation around fitness testing that happened, during the period between, again, I'm jumping from the late 50s, early 60s into the 80s. That's because there was a lot that went into that time period before the concept of health-related fitness started to emerge, but also the refinement of measurement. There were a few papers. This is one that's highlighted up on the screen, and I have to give a thanks to Jim Morrow for helping supply several of my slides because he already had many of them. So thank you, Jim. But Andrew Jackson's paper in 2006 in Quest talked about the evolution and the validity of health-related fitness. We also have some papers available that talk about the history in a different capacity with a little different spin, a little different detail. Chuck Corbin has published papers around the same topic because there was much debate and is that yours?
Yes, it's mine.
Oh, it would help if I point the correct end at the screen. And so a lot happened during that course of time around the difference between a skill-related perspective versus a health-related. And there was a lot of push and a lot of growing evidence to contribute to this concept of health-related fitness versus skill-related fitness, and in particular the way that it was measured and the way that standards were developed to assess a student or an individual. So I'm not going to get into politics and the details about the debates and discussions, but eventually what ended up happening, in the 80s, after a lot of this evolved and a lot of the discussion occurred, there were, from AFER, well, I don't know, were they still AFER at that time? Maybe the D was added by then? I don't remember. They did come out with a health-related fitness test manual. They also had one for college students. Today I'm going to focus more on the K-12 population for the presentation. So this started to be in collaboration with the President's Council, and there was a lot of development, again, a lot of discussion. But the more science emerged on the scene, the more questions came, if you will, about health-related fitness, how it is measured, who should have the test, how students should be awarded/rewarded. So, and Jim can share a lot more about this in terms of the history around FitnessGram and the evolution of health-related fitness, but at that same time, where there was, let's say, a difference in opinion about how fitness should be measured, how it should be determined, a group developed the FitnessGram. How many of you know FitnessGram, are familiar with it? So most people in the audience. FitnessGram emerged on the scene in the 80s and into the 90s. The FitnessGram items, as you can see on the left, cover all of what? The health-related fitness components. And different options to measure different components of fitness. So from aerobic capacity, there's the PACER test, 1 mile run. Under body composition, which my colleague David Friedman is going to discuss the standards for FitnessGram and the CDC standards looking at body composition, but giving option of a skin fold versus and a BMI. So not needing to do both of those tests, that's not what this slide is implying, but there's the option. And then under muscular strength, endurance, and flexibility, curl-up, trunk extension, 90-degree push-up, the back saver, sit and reach for flexibility, and the shoulder stretch, both flexibility measures. So back in the 50s, there was this analysis of how are U.S. kids doing compared to European kids. Over time, there was refinement of the test and the way that we measure things, the way we define fitness. And then emerging on the scene were a series of larger studies that were conducted. The National Children and Youth Fitness Study, which is that item there, that's the report on the left side. And there was a phase one and a phase two. Essentially, what these types of studies did was do larger surveillance of youth physical fitness to be able to say, where are we at with kids' fitness? This occurred in the mid-80s. So we went from a report that shocked the president to the creation of a council to the development of different tests to some deliberation about appropriate tests and appropriate components of fitness to measure to larger scale tracking. And then really taking that perspective forward with the President's Council, what is now, and this is a shot of their website currently today, there has been some evolution within the President's Council with their test. They now call it the President's Challenge, which includes physical activity as a component. It also includes fitness. The interesting part is that right here, when we talk about award benchmarks and for kids who take their physical fitness test, the physical fitness test from our SHIPS 2006 data, the School Health Policy and Program Study from 2006, shows that this test is, at that point in time, we're doing it again in 2012, so this might change, still the most widely used test. 48% of schools use the physical fitness test. It's primarily free. Materials are low or no cost to be able to implement in schools. Anyone want to take a guess, though, as to some of the issues with the test? Jim can't answer. Say that again, Frank. Correlating the items on the test with health outcomes is difficult to measure. I'm not going to go into great detail about norm reference and criterion reference standards, but I will in just a second give you a highlight. So schools still have a lot of opportunity to download the information for the physical fitness test, to purchase at a low cost the awards to give students who are at or above the 85th percentile. And this shows the Presidential Physical Fitness Award representing the 85th percentile. So essentially, without going into great detail, these you can see up at the top, each component, or each test, essentially, measuring a different component of fitness, as we went through a couple slides ago. Curl-ups, partial curl-ups, shuttle run, B-sit reach, sit and reach, etc. And basically, this is a norm referenced physical fitness test, meaning, exactly to Frank's point, that it does not measure an individual's fitness test outcome with a health outcome, or if they achieve a certain level of fitness, what impact does that have on health, or how does that correlate with health? It's more, how are they compared to, I mean, what was the sample that they used, Jim, in the 85 National Youth Fitness, the 85 National School Population Study, Fitness Study that I showed previously, is the population they use to create the norm reference standards for this fitness test. So what do you think happens when we have an award given for those who hit the 85th percentile? If you take yourself back to school, and usually the same 85%?
Yeah.
Do you all remember? I'll share a brief story about what happened in my middle school for the 2 years that are already painful in middle school, right, for adolescents, that they would hang up the pictures of those who met the award on a big, huge bulletin board. So these were the Presidential Fitness Award winners who, you know, we're at the 85th percentile or above. Well, what do you think happened? So we got measured fall and spring of each year of middle school. So what do you think happened with those pictures? Did they ever change? The same kids, right? Every time. And this has ramifications because it can set up in a child's mind the sense that I will never have a high level of fitness. I will never be as athletic or fit in the child's mind as those who are up on this board. So I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about the graph. Essentially, it goes to the point of when we look at criterion referenced health standards, I think back to one of my first slides that looked at health-related fitness and skill-related fitness. And FitnessGram is a fitness test that uses criterion referenced health standards to simply say if a child achieves this in the PACER, for example, PACER looking at aerobic capacity, they are in FitnessGram terms, the healthy fitness zone. So saying they have correlated that, and aerobic capacity, I think it's fair to say, has probably the most evidence around its relationship to health and the implication that can have. If you're not at a certain fitness level, you can have other health issues. So there's a big difference in using a norm referenced versus criterion referenced, because when you look at criterion referenced, you're really not compared to that large norm reference sample. You're compared to your own self. So as we talk about fitness testing and its use in schools, I've alluded to this in different ways. We know that over time, there has been widespread dissemination and use of fitness tests in schools. We already talked about the award scheme. We talked about the implications that can have. And really, if you look at I gave you a brief synopsis of back in time and why fitness really came on the scene from a larger scale perspective. We also had some large tracking surveys that were conducted. When we talk about it in schools, and we look at a test such as FitnessGram that was developed back in the 80s and 90s, the main goal of using fitness tests in schools has been to facilitate fitness education within a physical education curriculum and instruction. And the reason I bring that up is because if you look at FitnessGram materials on their website, you look at really the philosophy behind FitnessGram, and that is to really integrate concepts of fitness into the curriculum, not to let fitness overtake the curriculum and really be the curriculum, but use it as a tool to assess students, to have students assess themselves, to set up plans for physical activity so that they might improve some of their components of fitness, and to just teach students about the concept of lifetime physical activity and how that will contribute to fitness and ultimately their health over time. What we do know, though, and what some of the other presenters will really get at, and what Allison and I have become very interested in, because we do a lot of work with our states that we fund at CDC, a lot of them are starting to say, we just want to start measuring fitness across our state. But it can bring a lot of different issues that can introduce a lot of error. If you don't have support within the curriculum to implement fitness testing and hang your hat on only the fitness levels of students, it can be problematic. So there are certainly a lot of issues that come up when we implement fitness tests in schools anyway, because we might not be training teachers appropriately on how to implement, how to assess, how to make it a safe and encouraging environment for students. But now you take it up a notch, start using it as surveillance, reporting back to your state health department, your state education department, what types of things emerge from that. And I know Jim will get into some of the experience that has happened in one of the states. So we started looking at fitness testing requirements and practices. In 2010, this comes from Shape of the Nation data, which the National Association for Sport and Physical Education does, interviews each state to look at different policies and practices. And in their 2010 report, 19 states required student assessment of physical education. Not to say it's fitness assessment, but they actually have a policy that says you are required to assess student performance in physical education. They then go on to ask a series of questions about, okay, if you require it, what do you require? How do you do that? 14 states require assessment of physical fitness. 7 require assessment of knowledge of physical education content. 5 require assessment of participation in physical activity outside of physical education, which, what a concept, right? This is something we're trying to get into the curriculum, and to see that states actually require it as part of student assessment is really nice. We hope that number goes up. 6 states require the assessment of personal or social interaction in physical education. So there is some requirement around that. And in some cases, when a state requires the assessment of physical fitness, they might also either encourage or require a certain test. It might be FitnessGram. It might be the President's Council Physical Fitness Test. We're in the state of Georgia. Georgia has a mandate to measure fitness from a surveillance perspective. And I can't remember the grade levels, though. Do you, Allison?
Not off the top of
it's not all. Do you, Jim?
No, I should
know. I know, we both should too, but it's not. All I do know is that it's not every grade. I think in the legislation they did not necessarily specify a fitness test, but they convened an advisory committee that concluded that FitnessGram should be the test that's used, so that the same test is used for surveillance. Because if you can imagine trying to use two different tests that are based on two different types of standards, you can't make comparisons. This is something I also pointed out from our 2006 School Health Policy and Program Study, which, as I mentioned, is repeated again in 2012, so we'll have updated numbers. By 2013, 49% of all schools use the physical fitness test from the President's Challenge, as I showed you that screenshot. That's what the fitness test falls within, what's now called the President's Challenge, in at least one required physical education class or course. So we ask it just, do you use it in at least one class or course? And at that point, 13% use FitnessGram. So we're really interested to see how those numbers might shift when 2012 comes. So moving into this concept of utilizing, where are we going, where are we kind of now with fitness testing? I think that there's a lot of room for improvement in how we integrate fitness testing in physical education within the curriculum and how PE teachers instruct around fitness testing. But there's also a lot that is going on, as we discussed, around surveillance of it from a public health perspective. Obviously, we know this is greatly influenced by childhood obesity. It's influenced by physical activity and fitness and academic performance. Take this, anyone from California in the audience? They've collected FitnessGram data for a number of years, and a couple times, I believe, have looked at the correlation between fitness and academic performance. And also, of course, health behaviors in childhood and adulthood influence this need or desire to use large-scale fitness testing across states or even across districts. Many states have passed or are considering large-scale or statewide fitness testing, which we know because we talk quite a bit with states. Some of the concern that comes to our mind is, what about data quality? What type of measurement error gets introduced? And I just got the "you're done" signal. and that can truly be problematic. And are they using health-related fitness measures, or are we still using some of the skill-related or even norm-reference fitness measures? I'm going to buzz through the next few pieces because the last slide I really want to get to, talking about the what's going on currently with the President's Council test. So there are a lot of different support materials and resources I'm going to direct you to. All my slides are online. I wanted to just put a snapshot. NASPE has come out with a position statement recently around the appropriate uses of fitness measurement. It outlines a lot of stuff I've just alluded to, but goes into more detail. And then, I don't know how many are familiar with the report to the President from the White House Task Force on Childhood Obesity. Within that report, under physical activity and school-based approaches, essentially what was recommended was what is being called the revision and modernization of the President's Council's physical fitness test. So this is something that Allison and I have been working on with a very large group of people. And it's really meant to examine the scientific literature that's focused on the relationship between fitness and health among youth population. So all with the purpose of informing the President's Council so that they are able to come up with a revised test that is more health-related and is based on criterion reference health standards. But before you can get to that point, you have to take a look at the science. So we've been, over the last year plus, doing a very in-depth systematic review of the science, including studies from 2000 to 2010, and examining four fitness components: aerobic, muscular strength, muscular endurance, and flexibility, with multiple outcomes. So you can see we've included a whole lot of different health outcomes to look at the studies that have examined fitness and health. What's coming up next is actually in a couple weeks. We'll be back in Washington, D.C., reporting out to an independent IOM committee that is going to be looking at our systematic review and essentially taking it from here. The IOM is an independent scientific committee, which we cannot be involved in from this point forward after we give them the systematic review. They will then come out with a report. It's anticipated next summer, making recommendations on revising and modernizing the physical fitness test for the President's Council. So that hopefully gave you a bit of history, as I said, and a glimpse into the future about what's happening with fitness testing and all the different dynamics that I was only able to touch on at very surface level. I'm going to turn it over now to Jim Morrow, who's going to give more detail about fitness testing experience.